Pro tip.
If you can do a quirky costume, then it's always worth it. Especially if, like me, your target audience tends to be kind of like the cosplayish type people.
Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to the Webcomics Company Podcast, a weekly now podcast about all things creating comics. I'm Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com, and joining me today we have Zoe Kirk-Robinson from ZoeRobinson.com, where you can find all of the things that she does, which are too many to list. We have Luke Healy of SwanieNuke.com.
Oh, hi.
And James Spence is not with us this week, but we have a very capable replacement in the form of Matt Dyson of MooAndKeo.com.
Hello. And it's MooKeo.com.
Sorry. 1 week we'll do this.
I was so close. 1 week all of them will be right.
We'll get all the URLs right.
It's always ever. Somebody always messes up Zoe's, and then I think when Zoe did it, she accidentally messed up James's. I don't know if we've ever had correct URLs all around.
It's our thing.
Part of our jobs.
In a change to what you may have heard previous weeks, we're going to try keeping things short and snappy by restricting ourselves to half an hour's discussion per podcast. Luke has a robot who will come out with some form of strange noise when we reach the 30-minute mark. And we'll wrap it up there. So all you need to know about webcomics in 30 minutes, that can be our tagline.
30 minutes, but our robot will get us.
Oh, dear.
What we'll actually hear is the sound of the robot rising up, becoming sentient, and destroying Luke before moving on to the rest of humanity.
It sounds a lot like unintelligible gibberish.
And so does the robot.
Okay, so you've just heard some jokes just there off the cuff of the moment. That's not a phrase. Which is not particularly neat segue into our theme this week, which is crafting humour. So I think all of us have some light or humorous elements in our comics to various extents.
I think
Zoe is a character-based comedy most of the time.
I would say yes. The humor comes from the characters and perhaps from the situations, but mostly the characters.
Okay. When you come to write jokes, do you think of a joke, then think of how you can fit it to the characters, or is it more that you think about what the characters would say, and they come out with funny things? How's the best good way to describe it?
It's a little bit of both. Sometimes we have a situation where Jennifer and I think it's going to be funny, and then we'll look at it from the point of view of how would the characters set this up or react to it. So yeah, there's a lot of character-based thinking from that. But sometimes you just have this idea and it's like, there's the joke. And we don't need to do it, we just need to work out why would the characters be in this situation in the first place. So it all depends on what exactly you've got as your idea from first principles and move from there.
Okay. Cool. Because For myself, because I can generally, I can move people into any situation and create people just for the joke. So it's, what I tend to do is I think up the joke first and then often work out how I can communicate this visually. And then, do you guys find that when you do jokes, you have, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Sometimes I get an idea for a joke and I know it can work. It's just getting it to work is like hitting it with a stupid hammer. Why won't it work? And then in the end, you just end up having to abandon it and use something else. And then you'll find several weeks along, you can find somewhere else to put that joke in and it'll work. But yeah, sometimes not every joke works in every single place.
Yeah, letting them develop like that is actually a very good tip, I think. If you do, you keep a notebook with you, Matt, for writing down these ideas that you can't get to work?
I have a million different notebooks. all the times I just sketch, just write things in the corner of my sketch pad and then come back to them later. But with myself, I think I've mentioned last time I was on the podcast, I tend to approach Moon Keo from a story perspective nowadays, where I'll craft a full 30-strip storyline, and I kind of come at it from the opposite angle from Luke, in the fact that the story comes first and then the jokes kind of naturally crop up in the storyline. Mm. So it's like on the last one, the last finished storyline I have is the 9-to-5 one where they're all at work, and I'll craft them into the situations that I want them to be in for the story to work. And then I will find the humour inherent in whatever situation I put them in. I'll find the humour that's there rather than finding a joke and then finding a place to put it in.
Fair enough. That sounds like you've got a very structured way of working. I need to get structure because I don't have it.
Do you guys... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
Oh, do you guys find that jokes tend to... pop into your head almost fully formed, or do you get an idea and then you have to, you know, work on refining it and making it as good as possible, or do you find that inspiration just hits and you're right there?
A little of both.
I have to work on it. I love those times when it comes straight in there and it's fully formed, but most of the time I'll have a gem of an idea and have to really work at it to get it to go in.
Sometimes a joke will appear to me sort of fully formed in comic form, and then I think, no, wait, I'm actually remembering when XKCD did that. Well, what tends to happen more is I get sort of the kernel of the joke sort of comes to me. It's a sort of a phrase, or often yeah. It's entirely, and then it's a question of working around pictures on that, and sometimes if I can't find a way to turn it into pictures, it'll just end up being one of the many, many silly things I say on Twitter.
I adore your Twitter account, Luke. It is one of the brightest moments of my day. I'm a fan of the fun, so... yes.
There's far, far too many puns. I should probably put a health warning on that account.
There is no such thing as too many.
Puns are a good example of a joke that you really... You know, it doesn't just have to pop into your head. Puns are a joke you can really go out and search for. You know? Basically, yeah, just like consult a rhyming dictionary or.
Joke that I'm the most proud of ever is actually probably one of the world's worst puns that ever existed. It's a while back, I think. I had them, they were both on Safari. Which are my characters, and they'd woken up in the morning, one of them says to the other, so what are we doing today? The other one goes, well, this morning we're doing this, that, and the other, and in the afternoon we're going to an elephant graveyard. And the other one turns around, surely, I thought that would be more of a morning activity. Yeah, it's terrible, it's awful, I should be shot several times. It's even really that funny, but it made me laugh.
Matt, your comic is very sort of kids friendly. Your target audience is people quite generally.
My target audience is, I try my best not to have a target audience. It's really weird. I tend to sell a lot more to the cosplay style of people and the younger end of the audience, but I've had lots of different people buy stuff, so I tend to aim to make it fully kiddie-friendly as well as interesting as I am for adults, but yeah, I try and make it PG or a G, suitable for all, etc.
And when it comes to sort of the level of your jokes, because do you sometimes think of a joke and then think, actually, this won't be accessible to the wide audience which I'm trying to go for?
If I was thinking from a marketing point of view, I probably should think that. There are definitely many a joke in there that would go over the heads of little kids. I think I made a joke about internet browsers a couple of storylines back that will go over lots of younger kids' heads. But I do the comic to amuse myself, and while I do try and make it so that a lot of my stuff is as accessible as possible, I'm not afraid of making the odd joke that's while suitable for younger kids, will probably go over their heads.
Do you have a question for the team? If so, pose it at www.webcomics.co.
Webcomics Company Podcast.
Personally, myself, I decided at some point probably a considerable number of people aren't going to get some of these, and I just thought, okay, that's probably all right. I'll let my sort of, I haven't really decided on what the sort of audience is, but I'm accepting that it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
Well, if you look back 10, 15 years, maybe not even that, you'd probably come on the general knowledge that you don't do that. You know, you've got to make it as general as possible. But nowadays, things like XKCD, like Piled High and Deeper, like other such things that are very narrow niche comics have proved that you can do something that you're not necessarily gonna have everybody in the world get and still be quite popular and successful.
The audience can come to you on the web rather than you go to the audience, which is a big difference between web and newspapers, I guess.
You're not playing to an audience of whoever reads that particular paper or whoever's at a particular newsstand. You're playing to an audience of potentially everybody that's got a computer and a modem.
Yeah.
You know, I actually contest a little bit. You said that, you know, XKCD is quite narrow in the amount of people it could get. I know that there are a lot of jokes in there about maths and stuff, but I know nothing about maths. I was quite bad at maths in school. At science, I did biology, so there's none of those jokes. You know, they're going over my head. But I think frequently the jokes, they're not really about the maths, if you know what I mean. It's kind of hard to explain.
I know exactly what you mean. It's just, it's a lot more of a niche comic than would have existed before, is kind of what I'm aiming at.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the most narrow comic in the entire world, isn't XKCD, but it's a hell of a lot more narrow than what used to exist.
Yeah, that's true. But I think, actually, it's kind of interesting that this came up about accessibility, because there's a thread in the Webcomic List forums at the moment. Just for future reference, it's called I'm Having a Dickens of a Time Getting a Fan Base. And the guy...
With an apostrophe. I'm still not sure whether that apostrophe should be there.
Does Dickens own the time? That's generally a way of working out the apostrophe.
Well, Dickin isn't a word, so there shouldn't really be an apostrophe there.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, shouldn't
there be single quotes around Dickens?
Well, if it's correctly apostrophed, I don't even know. Is there a verb to put an apostrophe in something? There is now. Apostrophated. It'll catch on like wildfire. But no, the guy was just saying that, you know, it's like, oh, I'm doing comics that I don't think a lot of people will get. But I think that just because you're doing, you know, I could use a TV program as an example here. Have you guys ever watched one called The Big Bang Theory?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so for people who haven't seen it, basically it's about these scientists and these nerds who are nerdy. And there's a lot of references to kind of nerd culture and even sometimes the kind of physics that they're doing. But the jokes are never really about that. The jokes are quite accessible, and you get it. The joke for the situation isn't that he said something funny when he was spouting off all that that science jargon. It's you're laughing at the situation that he's so nerdy, and it's hilarious that he thinks that that's a good way to communicate with someone, if you know what I mean.
You'll also find that Big Bang Theory, the reason it does so well and it's so accessible to a lot of people who don't even begin to get most of the differences is, while it is a very nerdy show in appearance, it's very tightly formatted in the standard comedy sitcom framing that they do in America. It's all cues are there as they should be, so it's in that framework that everybody's used to.
That's a very good point. It's a bit like Frasier in that respect. There are a lot of times I've watched Frasier and I've read up on X, Y, and Z, like Renaissance art or something. I read that because it was. I had a bit of time, and then I went back and I saw an episode of Frasier later on where it mentioned something in that, and I thought, oh, there's a joke there. I didn't realise.
Frasier is still funny if you don't know the things, and that's kind of the point that I'm making. It's very well written.
Yes.
Do you think there's a comics sort of a similar convention in sort of comedy comics as to a framework which things can fit around?
There is, definitely.
Well, I mean, I thought I could bring up an example real quick of a comic that I really don't understand the subject matter, but I find it really funny. I don't always understand, which is Dresden Kodak. You know, all the science jargon and the philosophy stuff is there, but the jokes are built around us. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, another one is early questionable content that was ridiculously focused on indie music at the time. There were a hell of a lot of comics that had so many references and you had to swim through some of the text. Yet I still stuck through and read it and really enjoyed it, even if I wasn't into that musical culture. I completely agree with you, Luke, in the fact that you can have a comic that, while it is catered for a niche, but is broad enough in its writing style so that anybody can pick it up if they want to.
I guess the real point that I was trying to make is you can write a comic that's accessible and funny to a lot of people, but that doesn't necessarily equal dumbing it down and doing what everyone else is doing. So you can write about what you want to write about, but if it's well written enough, everybody should really get it, or most people.
But at the end of the day... Sorry, go on, Luke.
Well, one thing I found, I quite often include references to fairly niche topics, often related to science, because that's what I understand. And I don't think I've ever overestimated the intelligence of my audience, which it surprises me how people sort of, they either get things or they know enough of things to understand. I mean, sometimes I just don't do jokes very well and it doesn't work, but it's fairly rare that I do, unless I do a cultural reference which doesn't work in America. Otherwise, people not getting references tends not to matter as much as it would. I would have thought it would.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that people, you know, shouldn't shy away subjects they want to write about. You know, somebody could write a comic about Cthulhu mythos, and I don't know anything about that, but if it's well written enough, I'll still laugh.
I did that.
Oh, really?
I did a pun based on what the words look like and what this, as opposed to what they sound like. So there's an episode of All Over the House where Ebony comes in and says, Cthulhu called, he said, Fatargan, which is a made-up word, but it's from the Cthulhu mythos. And then Tezrin said, oh, really? But I spelt really as Rillier, which is one of the cities from the Call of Cthulhu. And it's the most popular All Over the House strip ever written. just because it got picked up by the H.P. Lovecraft literary podcast, which I thought was quite funny.
It's really random what ends up being your most popular comic sometimes. Usually it's something that you'd never even consider.
Exactly. I mean, that just came to mind. I thought, I need a filler strip quickly for today because I don't have my main one finished. So I did that. It's one panel. That's all of the dialogue. And it's the most popular one there. I don't understand why.
Oh my gosh. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Luke. to say something? No, okay.
As a general point, I find that if there's something that you're really interested in, even if it's fairly niche, and this doesn't just apply to humour, actually, but if you're really into it and you're a good writer, you can communicate that and people can enjoy your interest in the subject, even if it's not their specific interest.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good point.
Yeah, like every Kate Beaton comic.
Yeah, I learn things through Kate Beaton, I find. I consider it a continuation of my GCSE history.
And that's another example of comic that's not dumbed down, but it's still accessible. I'm just going to keep saying that over and over again. I don't know why it's on my mind so much.
Because a lot of people in that thread on the webcomic list were saying, well, not outright saying, but definitely suggesting that if your comic wasn't successful, you should change the comic to be what people want it to be. And
not in the slightest ever.
Yeah,
that's quite possibly the worst thing you could ever do. If you're going to be writing a comic long term, even medium to long term, then you've got to enjoy what you're writing, because if you don't enjoy what you're writing, it's going to show in your writing, it's going to show in your artwork. If you've got to understand what you're writing, it's got to be something that you would enjoy reading, and you've just got to have a passion for it. If you don't, then it's going to show.
Yes.
Yeah, I
agree, but at the same time, you can really improve on just, like, the basic skills of how to deliver a joke via comic, you know what I mean? You don't have to stray too much from what you want to write about, but, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with looking at what works for other people and seeing maybe how they do it and how you could incorporate it.
Oh, no,
definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, that's not really what I was getting at anyway. I mean, by all means,
try to improve yourself.
But I was talking about more topic. You've got to be doing something that you enjoy.
Definitely. So what would you say was the basic structure of the general joke? Because I know there are a few rules that you can use if you're going to structure a joke. What would you guys say was the main way of doing a joke?
My rule tends to be, and this might be just me being lazy, but brevity is king. I try and reduce things down to as little as possible, generally, to get a joke across. And it could just be the sort of jokes I'm writing, but I find that works, and it helps that I don't have to fill four panels. I can contract things down to any particular size or shape. But I definitely try and keep things as concise as possible with as minimal excess baggage.
I once had a lecturer tell me that the best tip you could ever give somebody for writing is take your first draft, take out half the words, and then rewrite it to take out half the remaining words, and then you've got what you need.
Yeah, drill it down to the essence. That's a good, very good point.
It's true. I mean, there's that famous Shakespeare quote, just brevity is the soul of wit, and it's as true now as it was when he said it, you know? If something's in there that's not helping the joke, then it's hurting it.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think my general gist for going on a joke is usually something that leads up to the audience having a misconception that they do not know is a misconception. Then they reveal that this is a misconception. That's a joke.
Yes.
And just got to make that funny. It's giving the audience a misconception that they do not believe to be one.
Yeah, that works with my structure as well, because my main structure is situation and build-up, and then a sleight of hand to knock it off centre, and then the actual punchline. So that works with that, because you'd have the sleight of hand almost. I mean, I suppose it's more of just a misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got...
And then there's the golden rule. The golden rule being, if all else fails, then a terrible, terrible, terrible pun.
Yes.
Oh, the worse a pun is, the better it is.
Exactly.
I'm going to come out with another joke-telling mantra, which might be a bit tired, but the secret of comedy is... timing!
Finally!
And that's an example of how not to do it or deliver. But I like to think that even with a single panel comic, there's an element of timing in the way that somebody will read through the comic, especially the text. And often I will change small words in the comic to change the number of syllables. So often if I've got a comic and it requires somebody's name, and it could be anything, I'll think, does this work best if that's a two-syllable name or a one-syllable name? And just often I read it out of my head, and especially with things that are more text-based than image-based, it helps just sort of say it out loud and see and check that it sort of works rhythmically. And I guess the images are also part of that rhythm as people read from left to right, top to bottom.
Yeah, I think it's good to try and imagine the situation as though it was animated, if that makes sense. Because the way you structure your panels and where you place the speech bubbles and everything will inform in your mind as you're reading it how it moves to you. That's a bit abstract. I'm trying to think of a way to explain it more clearly. But if your joke, in general, this is just for gag comics. I know a lot of people do like works that are jokes that might only work as a comic. But if you're doing a fairly traditional gag strip, then the joke should work just as well if it was being said by actors on a stage, you know?
Yeah.
It could be a visual gag as well, though. So, if it was done on stage, ignore me. Most people do.
The Webcomics Company Podcast. It may not be a real company, but it's a real podcast.
I think if you're doing a joke, you've either... well, maybe this is too narrow of a way to look at it, but I think that, you know, as a good general rule, maybe if you're starting out, you either want your joke to be feedline punchline, you know, straight away, cut it straight down in with your feedline and then bang the punchline, or you want to introduce suspense where there's a lot of build up and then the punchline is your absolute payoff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that a mistake that people sometimes make in webcomics that I kind of have seen a lot is that they add in, I'm just going to call it the fourth panel. Obviously, it could be any number panel, but you have your joke told in three, and then in the fourth panel, they're either standing there looking at each other annoyed, or one of them is saying, I hate you.
Yeah, the unnecessary panel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, guys, just stop doing it, please.
Once the punchline is there, that's your joke told. Bang, you're done.
If you need a character to look at the camera to indicate that they've told a joke in a very sort of DreamWorks sort of way, then the joke has probably not worked that well. Possibly. It's a similar thing. It annoys
me. Here's a tip then for all those people that end up doing that sort of thing. Just because your strip has traditionally four panels, just because you've got that little template that you put in Photoshop or PaintShop Pro or whatever you use that has four panels, does not mean you need to use four panels. If you have a joke that works better in three, then spend the 10 minutes making yourself a new template that takes up the same space as three panels. The joke will work better, people will respect you more, and get more out of your webcomic.
Yeah.
Ooh, that turned into a pet peeve.
It's true. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I have four different templates for my comics. One of one panel, one of two, one of three, and one of four. But, yeah, so that I don't feel, I've got to stretch this out to three panels, or I've got to cut one of these lines out because I've only got three panels, I can't go into four. No, four different templates that I can actually work with the size of joke that I need.
It's good. I don't have templates. Just thought I'd chip that little slice of information there.
I don't think templates would work with yours, though, would it? Because
I know it
the amount of panels you've got depend on the part of the story you're in.
my comic frequently doesn't kind of have a punchline. I try to create sort of more of an amusing atmosphere in the way the characters move and emote and stuff like that, rather than have an explicit joke all the time. But occasionally I do like to try and write in something funny kind of at the end of the page. You know, mix things up.
I like to think that some of the things we said applies to other messages you're trying to get through a comic rather than exclusively jokes. So, yes.
I think it would, especially the Shakespeare quote, because he didn't always write jokes, did he? He did some tragedies as well.
Mostly.
Yeah. And again, brevity worked for those. Otherwise, you'd just be bored and not care. And it's I'm sure many, many people in schools reading Shakespeare have experienced.
Yeah,
I did Macbeth in school, and my teacher told me it was a tragedy / comedy, and I beg very, very hardly to differ. What is funny about Macbeth?
Oh, come on, there's great bits in there. The bit with the guy with the hangover talked about how he can't have sex with his wife because he's had too much to drink.
That's one scene, though, in the entire play of, like, crazy bloodshed and madness.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, like, Merchant of Venice, I can see there's your tragedy / comedy, but, yeah, I don't know. Macbeth's too tragic for my tastes.
I liked Macbeth. It was great.
Oh, it's good, yeah, but funny? I didn't find it funny.
Okay, I guess we're probably very close to running out of time, so do we have any conclusions? Including remarks.
Oh my gosh, wait.
That's okay. That's what you guys have been waiting for the last 30 minutes. That is our
That was great timing, though. Great.
It was quite good time.
Good timing.
Well done.
Well, I'm going to finish with a quote, if that's all right. I found a random quote while we were talking, and I think it's quite apt for the way that I write jokes anyway. It's a quote by Doug Lawson, and it's, "One nice thing about telling a clean joke is that there's a damn good chance no one's heard it before."
Oh, I like that.
So, yeah, that's me.
Oh, wow.
Zoe?
My tip is definitely keep it short as you can. Because size does matter.
You had to wait until I was drinking to say that, didn't you?
Yes.
I guess if I just have one tiny tip, it's that, hey, if you find that you're working on something and you really can't get it to work, don't be afraid to just kind of let it go and move on to something else. Don't post something substandard if you can help it. Oh, guys, we forgot one really important tip, though.
Yeah.
Got it. You know, that the real secret to writing a funny webcomic is having to be about gaming. Oh, video games.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
A little font of polarity.
You've got to make the main character yourself and be retardedly stupid and then have a really pretty girl fall in love with you for no apparent reason.
Yeah. That's comedy gold right there.
I'm not jiving at the comic, honest.
One thing that we were discussing before was you don't need to dumb it down. You'd be surprised at how good your audience be, and if you're producing comics on the web, then your audience will come to you, and that will be good. And so don't feel you need to dumb it down, but maybe some other things might help. And my second one is that the secret of comedy is...
Thank you for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. See you in 2 weeks' time.
You have been listening to the Webcomics Company podcast with me, Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
Me, Matt Diapton of Mukio.com.
I'm Luke Healy of SwanieNook.com.
And I'm Zoe Kirk Robinson of ZoeRobinson.com and a few other places, but just go to that one and it'll get you there. You've been listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.